And welcome back to another episode of the BeiserReport.com radio podcast, this being your breakdown edition, as we talk about this 36-10 victory, a steamrolling, as Ross predicted in our preview show earlier last week, of the Bison over the Jackrabbits. There's a lot to talk about, and we have a little bit of basketball to get into with a big game coming at home here on Wednesday night. So joining me is my co-host, as always, Mr. Ross Suglum. Ross, how does it feel to be almost spot on with your prediction? I think you can take some time here to pat yourself on the back.
Yeah, great, I guess. I mean, most of these things are guesswork. I just felt like going into that game, North Dakota State, very good in the playoffs, very good in second meetings. You saw that last year, certainly, with both Montana and the University of Northern Iowa. And I just felt like what they were going to be able to do against – South Dakota State, especially if the quarterback's mobility was a little bit lessened, was going to be pretty nasty. And that's exactly, I would say nasty would be the word to describe that game up and down, to be honest with you.
All right, so before we get into that game, let's talk about the press conference you attended earlier this afternoon. And with the first news being, I think we got to talk about what time the game is going to be for this James Madison game at home this weekend.
Yeah, 6 o'clock on Friday, the beloved Friday night tailgate. I'm already putting the pressure on Ryan Burns to make his inaugural trip to Fargo.
In my defense, I was derailed by car problems the first time I tried to come out in terms of for a game this season. So maybe the second time's a charm. We'll have to see.
Yeah, we're going to set up a GoFundMe for a bus ticket.
Greyhound or Megabus, we'll have to see.
Yep, that 3:30 a.m. bus ride up to Fargo. But yeah, this is a great one. Seems like the entire city of Fargo, half of the state of North Dakota, decides to call it a day at noon, and it is really an unbelievable experience. That Friday night tailgate, people get off work really excited to have a good time, excited to watch some football. There are literal dance parties, DJ dance parties inside of tents, and the tailgating rigs are roaring. And from the outside, it might not look like much because people aren't walking around as much as they would be in September. But inside these parties, it is something else. And so the Friday night semifinal game has become somewhat of a tradition at North Dakota State, and that tradition is going to live on this Friday against James Madison.
All right, so let's actually get into that press conference now. Let's start with some injury updates. The first one being, do we have an update on Pierre G. Tucker?
Yeah, they warmed him up. You could see a very visible knee brace on his leg in warmups. I incorrectly reported that he looked like he was going to play. I guess I'm maybe being a little bit hard on myself, but I said that he and Shepard were both in full pads, and it looked like they were both going to go. They both were in full pads. It did look like they were both going to go, but Tucker returned in street clothes. I don't know how much of that was gamesmanship and how much of that was him trying to give an honest go. Obviously, we are not going to get that sort of information out of the coaching staff. Kleiman said that they didn't like his lateral movement and that doing nothing on Saturday, nothing on Sunday, and then trying to get back in there on Monday and see where he's at for a Friday game. They're feeling a little bit better about maybe giving him this one last week to get ready before then. Obviously, you would feel very comfortable, in 3 weeks in a Frisco type situation for the Division I championship. I think you'd feel like he was going to go then for sure. But Tucker was not able to play in this game, and they actually played a ton of nickel. North Dakota State, gave Dom Davis a lot of those snaps. So it ended up working out pretty well.
And when you look on the other side of the ball with Darius Shepard, I was a little surprised to see him not play in the first half, but then play in the second half. Do you want to explain kind of what happened there and what Coach Kleiman had to say about it?
Well, I specifically asked Coach Kleiman about this at the press conference today because I, as you did, thought it was a little bit strange. I thought that to get a player for one half and to except the second half, really, as when to get that player was interesting. You know, you talk about getting warm or staying warm. Weird, really, to sit the whole first half and then expect to get warm. But the explanation that was given to me made a little bit of sense. They just kind of tried to keep him loose on the sideline and then didn't ramp him up until halftime, because if they ramped him up for the first half, the coaching staff felt like and the training staff felt like that hamstring might tighten up potentially in the halftime time period, and that he would be more of a risk for injury in the second half. The staff told the training staff told the coaching staff that they would get him for one half. They chose to do everything so that half was half number two, and boy, what a second half it was for Shep.
And then when you look at this playoff bracket, on the other side of things, there's going to be two Missouri Valley teams here in the semifinals, with Youngstown State advancing. Any surprise there for you as they beat Wofford 30-23?
No, that shouldn't be a surprise to anybody that the Valley would have two teams left. As bad as things went for South Dakota State this past Saturday, I think that had the bracketing been done a little bit differently, you might see potentially three Missouri Valley teams in the last four. I think that a game between South Dakota State and Eastern Washington would really be something to behold. And as we mentioned, you know, we felt like North Dakota and South Dakota State should have been flipped in their seeding. But it was an interesting little comment from Coach Klieman there at the press conference indicating that he felt like the best four teams were the four teams left. So potentially just the subtlest of digs possibly at the Jacks, indicating that he felt like despite their co-champion status, maybe they weren't the second best team in the Valley.
And then when you look at the basketball side of things, Dexter Werner was named the Summit League Player of the Week after his performance in a losing effort against North Dakota. 30 points, 13 rebounds, and 3 steals. I'm guessing this, again, is not going to be too much of a shocker to you, Ross.
No, cool for Dexter to get that award. I don't think he's won Summit League Player of the Week before. Interesting, of course, that it was a Player of the Week award based on one game, but this is mid-major non-conference basketball. The schedule is very sporadic, and I think that the media members of the league certainly understand that. And Werner's performance against UND was one of the better performances from a Bison big man in a long, long time, and I think certainly deserving of that award.
All right, so before we get into some recruiting talk, we have to talk a little bit about the James Johannesson situation. I'm sure many of our listeners have heard. James is now transferring from the University of Minnesota. He's going to be heading to, he announced, I believe, yesterday or Saturday, he's going to be heading to the Fighting Hawks of North Dakota. So this is for someone who also covers Minnesota. This doesn't really come as too much of a surprise to me to see James transferring from Minnesota. He was buried on the depth chart. He's got two very good running backs ahead of him in Shannon Brooks and Ronnie Smith. But the interesting thing to note here as well is that he was seemingly also passed on the depth chart by a walk-on running back by the name of Carlton Dijon. And while James, you know, he's probably, with his Minnesota career, he's going to be known for having a breakout spring game last year, but it doesn't look like things really developed too much from there. So, Ross, obviously, James being from Fargo South, what do you think about him going to North Dakota, and what do you believe of the NDSU interest in James?
I mean, from what I understand, from a little bit of the reporting that went on from the local media here, it sounds like he was talking, or at least had discussions with the North Dakota State coaching staff, at least the members of that staff that recruited him originally out of Fargo South. I remember he was teammates with current Bison running back Ty Brooks. They were part of a very, very good Fargo South team, and NDSU basically indicated that they not only don't have very much scholarship money left, but they definitely don't have running back money left. Brooks is a scholarship athlete that's been moved into that meeting room now. They will have Bruce Anderson and Lance Dunn back. They will have Damaris Purifoy back. Brooks, of course, and then Adam Cofield is a talented young player that is redshirting this season. So there wasn't a lot of scholarship money left to go around. You have to remember as well that Nick DeLuca's full ride scholarship was a scholarship that North Dakota State did not anticipate having filled going into the next season. So for them, really, to add a player that wasn't part of their plans and then to be shopping for a transfer was probably not entirely realistic. I understand, of course, that James is the all-time leading rusher at Fargo South. I understand that he's kind of a local hero, but I would not really stress about it too much if I am a Bison fan. That both, honestly, the running back room and the linebacker room are very deep, and linebacker would be, of course, where James would play on defense if he were to switch over to that side of the ball. But he'll go up to the University of North Dakota and probably have a better chance to play. They have two good backs up there, but the Santiago kid can probably play a slot receiver, maybe even play a little bit out wide. He's kind of a Bruce Anderson type. Then they've got the Oliveira kid who's more of the workhorse, and you could certainly see him getting into that rotation a little bit more than the rotation at North Dakota State.
Sounds good. So there's only a few tidbits I have in terms of recruiting information from this weekend. I was finally able to get permission from the lone official visitor from this past weekend, and he's actually committed to a Big Ten institution right now as well. His name is Mitchell West. He's from the Chicago area. He is a cornerback currently committed to Purdue. I'm not entirely sure for how much longer that's going to be the case, though, because he does tell me that the new head coach of Purdue, I believe it's Jeff Brohm, the former Western Kentucky head coach, has not reached out to him yet. So he's absolutely exploring his options. And from talking with him today, actually, he was very, very positive about his NDSU experience. You know, when I asked him what was his favorite part of the visit, he responded, you know, everything actually was, you know, there's just so many things I can be able to do up here. It sounds like he really connected with the coaches. He really connected with the players, and NDSU absolutely made a move for Mitch. So we'll have to see if he decommits from Purdue here in the next few weeks. And I think if that were to be the case, you're looking at NDSU having a very good shot at him, as they are looking for another corner. And then the only other really thing to note here is NDSU's official visitor from 2 weekends ago is Jake Springer, who just finished up his South Dakota official visit. He tells me he's aiming to have a decision sometime before Christmas. So when you're looking at the calendar today, that is the 12th of December as we're recording this. So he's got about 2 weeks to make a decision, and it looks to be a battle between NDSU and South Dakota. And you'd like to think that that's a battle that NDSU wins probably more times than not. So Mitchell West from Montini Catholic High School, I believe, in Illinois, committed to Purdue, took an official visit to NDSU. So that's the big thing to note from this past weekend, Ross. But let's talk a little bit of basketball before we get into this football game. There is a game coming up on Wednesday against UC Davis. And obviously, there's a bigger game on Friday against North Dakota, a rematch from last week. But let's get into this UC Davis game. What can you tell us about UC Davis?
They're a 500 ball club, very much like the NDSU Bison, North Dakota State. If you throw out their non-Division One counters, they would be 4-4. They're technically 6-4, so they're right around that mid-major 500 ball club type of deal. They just got blown out by Cal, and as far as looking into their specific calendar, it's difficult to see just how good they are. They've lost to Idaho. NDSU has some common opponents with Idaho. They lost to Oakland, who used to be a Summit League member. They've got wins over Drake and Sacramento State. Drake has a pretty decent reputation as a mid-major basketball school. They're obviously a Pioneer League football member. It has a little bit of NDSU relevance after the win over San Diego in football. But it's just tough to know just how good UC Davis is. I think they won the Big West 2 seasons ago and then opened their following season with a non-conference game against the Bison last year. And that game, I believe, ended up in overtime. And it was an overtime that NDSU probably had no business being in a season ago. Ended up winning that game, I think, 79-71. A good game, I think, from Dexter Werner and Paul Miller in that one. But I think this is going to be a competitive game coming up on Wednesday, and some pretty high-quality mid-major basketball in the Shield Center.
And when you look at this game, obviously, This needs to be a bounce back for this Bison squad. You know, depending on how Paul Miller plays, amongst other things, that's going to be a large determinant, as Paul's one of the most key players on this team. But, I mean, if you're going to give a prediction for this game on Wednesday, what are you thinking in terms of for the Bison fans that are heading back to Fargo to go see this game?
This is a big one. I mean that very much. This is a game coming off of a loss to North Dakota that was not okay. I know that UND had a pretty darn good showing recently against Northern Iowa, who, you know, you would consider to be one of the better mid-major programs in the country. They are, on more than one occasion, a mid-major program with a at-large bid into the tournament. And UND was able to compete in that game, certainly able to compete at a higher level than they were a season ago when they played Northern Iowa at home. So maybe that UND team is a little bit better than we thought, but not better to the point of being better than North Dakota State, and not better to the point of being a team that should have been able to come into Fargo, where NDSU has been so dominant, and get a win. That Bison home court is something that they have protected very, very well during both the Saul Phillips and Dave Richmond eras. And to lose a home game to the Fighting Hawks was not okay. So you're going to see, I think, potentially a little bit of a difference in the rotation. I think you might see Dave make some actual adjustments because he was so upset after the game against North Dakota on Wednesday. I think if they're going to shuffle the lineup at all, if they're going to shuffle minutes at all, it might have happened on this 7-day break, similar to a season ago. Some stuff occurred and Richmond decided to insert Cabellas into the starting lineup. So if you're going to see anything happen, I think you might potentially see it happen on Wednesday. So stay tuned.
I mean, are you trying to put a prediction here in terms of what you think?
No, nothing specific. I mean, we've talked on a number of occasions of the potential to send Carlin Dupree back to his role as the leader of the second unit. And I don't mean bench Carlin, because that sounds really harsh, but he's just so good coming off the bench. As far as a game prediction, I would say NDSU probably wins this game. I think, in the 60s somewhere, 66, 59, something in that range. I think they know they need a win. They know they need to play well going into their meeting with the University of North Dakota. So that would be my game prediction. But as far as the changes, I don't feel like I'm quite plugged in enough to give you anything concrete. I know I've got Coach Richmond's press conference tomorrow at noon, so potentially we'll be able to glean a little bit more information, and that's just a question of following either myself or the Bison Report on Twitter.
Sounds good. So let's get into this football game. I know people have been waiting long enough. 36-10. South Dakota State scores the first 10 points of the game, and then NDSU literally never really gives it back. And they go on a 36-0 run to end the game. And a large part of that, Ross, is because of the ground game. You look at it, 22 rushing attempts for South Dakota State, 52 rushing attempts for North Dakota State, and a very, very large discrepancy, which I'm sure you're going to get into here. But NDSU didn't start out the greatest, but, man, do they know how to finish strong.
Yeah, I think when you look at this game, the number one thing that really sticks out is that difference in the rushing, the total number of plays, really, I feel like was absurd, one team compared to the other. But running the ball is what Bison playoff football has been all about forever. Not just the Division I run, it was the exact same way when they were winning Division II national championships. And keeping the ball away from the other team, keeping the ball away from good offenses is certainly a part of that. And it was something that was done very, very well on Saturday. The totals were absurd. We're talking about 302 to, I believe,
37.
Yeah, 37. 302 to 37 was the difference on the ground, which is absolutely mind-boggling. I mean, they didn't double them up. They almost took them times 10. I mean, it was absolutely wild, especially when you look at the numbers from South Dakota State's win in October. This was utter domination and utter domination really after a pretty huge scare. I mean, when it's 10-0 Jacks, people are certainly questioning their travel plans to Dallas.
That's for sure. But I think there was one drive that really kind of started to move things in the right direction, and I just want to give it some context here. NDSU ran 73 plays on the day. SDSU ran 39 plays. And so NDSU has a 20-play drive. I have never heard of such a thing following college football, just football in general. They literally had the ball for 12 minutes in the second quarter. A 20-play, 82-yard drive that ends in a touchdown. That's going to – I just have never seen a 20-play drive, Ross. Just you were there live. What was that like to witness?
Yeah, and, you know, ESPN announcer Ahmad Brooks played for the University of Texas and then has spent much of his adulthood calling games. He said he had never seen anything like it either. I was able to watch the TV copy yesterday a little bit and then this morning. And it was really something else. I mean, that was something that you're not likely to see again for a very long time. There were a couple of flags, I think, that probably, you know, reset some down and distances and made a difference. But that's still just absolutely wild to run 20 plays in a game. And really, I mean, you're exactly right. NDSU was, you know, in a situation where they were probably pretty frightened by what they had seen out of South Dakota State offensively. It looked a lot like all of the bad things that happened when they played in October, and then they just erased the second quarter from existence. South Dakota State's offense got completely out of rhythm, and it was a rhythm that they would not even come close to recapturing.
And I want to talk a little bit about Easton Stick here. I think he played a large part in how successful that NDSU was on third down throughout the entire game. You look at NDSU being 10 of 13, and it's not like a ton of those were of the short variety, you know, those 1 and 2 yard ones. There were some longer ones thrown in there. You look at his stat lines on the day, 12 of 21, 188 yards, a touchdown, an interception. And then you look at what he did on the ground, 16 carries for 83 yards and 2 touchdowns. I thought he played pretty well. I'm pretty sure you'll agree, but I also know you want to touch on some things that you were seeing on social media as well.
Yeah, that was I was really impressed with Easton. I know that there was a play at the end of the first half there that was, you know, pretty unacceptable the way that that whole thing went down for NDSU to create a strip sack at the end of the game or at the end of the half, get the ball on the 1 foot line with 35 seconds left and not come away with any points was not okay. But this was just a masterpiece performance from Stick. I believe that there were 21 rushing attempts or 21 passing attempts, 16 rushing attempts for Stick personally. And then you have to remember how many of those running back carries are because of reads made by Easton on read option plays where he gives instead of keeps. He was involved all the time in that offense and was converting huge third downs to keep NDSU's defense on the sidelines, keep them fresh, and keep Goddard and Winicky off the field. It was really a masterclass from Stick all game long, not only on the ground but through the air. Had one misread where he was going to try and throw a back shoulder for a touchdown and didn't read cover two. The safety came and made an easy interception. That was just a bad read. The thing at the end of the first half, though, was an issue, of course, and it's just tough. I mean, this fan base is tough. This is a group that demands perfection. This is a group that was very hard on Brock Jensen during his time here. Carson Wentz was the local kid in NFL prospects. So it was very difficult to be hard on him, but the same armchair quarterbacks have had a few things to say about Easton Stick. And if you don't understand how good this kid is, if you don't understand how insane it is to be as good as he is as a sophomore, I can't help you. I just can't. He has been exceptional all season long. He is, you know, I know that Jeff and Dom did a really cool countdown of the top Bison that you can't lose. DeLuca was I think, second, and Tanguay was first. Well, those guys are gone. The real MVP on this team is Easton Stick. I don't mean that as disrespectful to Cole Davis, but I tell you what, if anything happens to Easton Stick in the next 2 weeks, you can seriously adjust your championship expectations for North Dakota State, and I mean that very seriously. Easton Stick is a very, very good player now, and sometime over the next two seasons is going to be an absolute superstar.
Well stated. Let's talk a little bit more about Darius Shepherd. We talked about him missing the first half, and then he comes out, and you look at his stat line, 4 receptions for 105 yards and a touchdown. Folks, you got to remember that's only in one half of play. It helps when you can take a bubble screen, 67 yards, turn the corner, put on the jets, and you're gone. But Darius Shepherd is an absolute weapon for Easton Stick in this offense.
Yeah, I thought he was exceptional. I shudder to think of what his production might have looked like, you know, with a whole half of football. But he was limited to just playing in the second half. And I will say this, once he got in there, it looked like all those limitations were, you know, completely gone. I don't think they really adjusted what they were doing at all, because the catch and run that he had for 25 yards was extremely impressive. And you're also not going to put a kid in a bubble screen situation if you don't think he can sprint. And sprint he did. That was a very impressive play. I halfway expected him to grab his hamstring, like on the 10-yard line or anything, because he was running so fast down the sideline to kind of put the afterburners on and put the exclamation point on that game. But if I tell you what, if he ran as hard and was as fluid with his movements as he was against South Dakota State, and he gets 4 or 5 days off in the rehab program for James Madison, I'm going to be very interested to see what he's able to do against the Dukes.
My next question for you is on the South Dakota State quarterback, Taryn Christian. I mean, there was a lot of speculation. How injured is he? Is he injured? You know, how effective was he in this game compared to the one earlier in the season? What, I mean, I know that you talked about it again on your Upon Film Review piece today on the Bison Report, folks. If you're not reading this on a Monday morning with a nice, you know, cup of coffee, whatever you want to read, the daily Bison news with, I encourage you to head on over to the Bison Report right now and check that out. But what were your thoughts on Terry Christian in terms of his injury potentially?
I got to tell you, this game, more than a lot of games that I've been around, had misinformation and accurate information. But the mind games and the reporting that was going on around this thing was absolutely wild. There was talk of suspensions because of drugs. There was talk of injuries across the defensive backfield, wide receiver group for South Dakota State. The one, I guess, piece of information that I got that I think I believe was the fact that Taryn Christian didn't practice a lot and had an ankle issue. There was a knockdown in the fourth quarter where you could very obviously see Christian go to his ankle and grab onto it. He was a pretty darn good soldier, though, through the rest of the game, really making sure to not show any ill effects of that injury. And I think it was a real injury. I think South Dakota State probably used him in that running play in the first drive as a way to say that maybe this isn't happening. We talked a little bit. I was talking to some friends and just talked about cortisone and how that's kind of a hell of a drug. And potentially, you know, if an athlete took a cortisone shot in the ankle area, he would be able certainly to not have a whole lot of pain for probably about an hour to an hour and a half. And boy, that sure seems to be when South Dakota State's offense fell off the table. I'm not saying that the two are directly correlated, but I would certainly say that there's at least a chance that that's the case. He was not a threat for the rest of the day running the football at all. So I would guess, if I had to, that Christian was definitely nursing an ankle injury. Probably, like I said, took a cortisone shot pregame. Completely legal. I mean, I'm not accusing South Dakota State of doing anything. But, like I said, probably took a cortisone shot, was feeling good for the first hour of real time, the first, you know, 17, 18, 19 minutes of game time. And then things probably stiffened up.
when you look at this NDSU defense going against Taron Christian, the first two drives for South Dakota State both go 7 plays, 70-plus yards, and end in points. But then, boy, oh, boy, did Matt Entz make some adjustments there. They just couldn't get anything going the rest of the game. What were some of these adjustments you saw when you look back and watch the film?
The two things that I noticed for sure were the willingness to understand that Christian was not going to wreck their lives on the ground. The pass rushers were able to pass rush and not maintain. I mean, it's always a point to maintain gap discipline, but they weren't obsessed with their rush lanes in the way that they would be against a fully healthy Taron Christian. And the other thing, and let me tell you what, South Dakota State complained about this a lot. The other thing would be that they really got hands on Dallas Goedert. Maybe some of it was holding, maybe not, but they were not going to allow him a free release by any stretch of the imagination. That was a huge problem in the first game. Goedert would run through the linebacker's hook, curl zone, and go into the safeties and either, you know, beat the safety at the point of attack or beat the linebacker over the top of his head and then be in the secondary with a full head of steam. His yard after the catch really would be what would concern me the most up to this point, I would say, in that first game. And getting into the secondary with such a head of steam was, you know, pretty scary stuff. This time around, though, it didn't happen. I mean, it absolutely didn't happen. He was not getting into the secondary on the move. He was covered. It was really a good job, I felt, by the linebackers and the safeties to control what he was doing and basically give Winicky up to Jalen Allison, who did a really good job. I thought that there was maybe an underutilized wrinkle. They did it for a touchdown that got called back. But when NDSU was in base and they had Chris Board in there, when they moved Jake Winicky into the slot, they don't actually follow him with Jalen Allison because those are almost zone, almost always zone looks out of the base for North Dakota State. So he get matched up with Board underneath and Dempsey over the top. And that actually was a matchup that Winicky could win quite often. So that was something, I guess, that I was surprised that they didn't do more often. They hit it for the touchdown that got called back. But if Winicky was out wide, Jalen Allison was doing a good job on him, and they were very, very physical with Dallas Goedert.
Another play I really want to get your thoughts on was one of the opening plays of the second half. NDSU gets the ball. Easton Stick throws the interception. It's down at the one, and then Grant Morgan gets the safety there to put NDSU up 6 points. It was 14-10. Now it's 16-10. In my opinion, that was one of the bigger momentum shifts of the game. What did you think about that safety play overall?
Yeah, Coach Stiglmeyer really downplayed it. I think I understand why he potentially did that as well, just from an actual strategy standpoint. What the difference is between a four-point lead and a six-point lead isn't much. You still need a touchdown. But from a momentum perspective, I thought it was really big. And from a field goal or field position, excuse me, standpoint, it was big as well. You have to free kick from the 20-yard line when that stuff happens. And so that becomes more and more of an issue for the defense having to go back on the field. You know, they've just been ground into a pulp on that that 20-play drive. They get a huge huge break on that error by Easton Stick to throw that interception, and then 2 plays later to give it right back up to allow Grant Morgan to make just a tremendous individual play. A lot of what NDSU does on defense is team-based and being gap sound, but this was Grant Morgan. He had to have anticipated the snap count because that jump was unreal. This is not a small man. And he might be very quick, but I don't think he's as quick as he showed. Christian Dudzik, former NDSU safety, had a really cool video that he was able to take because he was standing in that end zone, and it was from right over the quarterback's right shoulder. You can watch how that play really absolutely fell apart from SDSU's perspective. The running back was nicked up on the play. I thought that going back and looking at it, you know, when you're in the building, it doesn't seem like the game is over. But watching it back on tape, that was it, I think. The sequence in which South Dakota State got the interception, gave up the safety, kicked it away, and NDSU came and made it 19-10. That was probably it. I don't think that Bison defense was going to give up a lot of points after that. So the safety was a really big play and a hell of an individual effort by Grant Morgan.
Defensive back Dom Davis is someone that you've been exceptionally high on. You've talked about him, I think, religiously here in the last few weeks in your film review here on the Bison Report. And I know that you believe he played well again this past week. What do you think it is with Dom Davis that he's been able to be able to turn this corner?
Yeah, Dom, you know, it's not that there's anything personal or anything like that. I don't have any reason to be biased towards Dom Davis. He just keeps showing up on film, and it's consistent. And the way that NDSU has to play these spread teams, he is an incredibly important player. I think a lot of people are a lot more concerned about a national championship matchup with Eastern Washington because he wasn't part of what was going on. I mean, you had this goofy 3-3-5 nickel in which the Bison were playing three safeties, one of them being Eric Bachmeyer, who can't get a sniff on defense now, and, you know, playing Robbie Grimsley out of position. This Bison nickel defense, the 4-2-5 look with Davis in there, actually playing cornerback is a much better look than that 3-3-5 big nickel. I think it would do a lot better, really, against a team like Eastern Washington. We're going to find that out because this James Madison squad is going to try and spread NDSU out. And I would guess that if Tucker's healthy, it's going to be Tucker, Stumpf, Davis, and the other four, you know, standard defensive backs, depending on Jalen Wimbush's MRI on his chest. That are going to go for most of this game. That would be how I think this thing's going to go because of how well Davis is playing. They actually were letting him play in the base and do a little bit of outside stuff instead of bringing in Quentin McCoy when Wimbush went down, though the Bison didn't spend a whole lot of time in the 4-3 in this game.
Another thing I really want your thoughts on is the chippiness that was in this game between the two squads. Again, not a lot of love lost between these two teams, but it seemed like this game especially was pretty chippy.
Yeah, if you look, I think, at like the NDSU alums, the guys that played there during the championship era, I mentioned Christian Dudzik, Cole Jerick, Colton Hegel, guys that have played in this rivalry, the things that they have to say about South Dakota State are not nice. The word dirty is thrown around quite a bit. There is no love lost in this rivalry. I've talked about this rivalry being kind of the most respectful one as far as, you know, these two teams went into Division I together. You know, their issues with the University of North Dakota have a little bit different connotations. The whole hockey argument is there, and that the rivalry with Northern Iowa is just angry. I mean, that is some hateful stuff. I think that it's possible that just how friendly this rivalry with South Dakota State is might be overblown. And at this point now, I think the tone is really starting to shift where this is getting nasty. South Dakota State's probably sick of seeing NDSU win, and NDSU is sick of South Dakota State, you know, playing dirty. I mean, you talk about the knee injury to Levon Perry however many years ago, the ankle injury to Bruce Anderson this season, and then you've got their running back, number 44, diving at people's knees, the illegal low block on an interception return, Dallas Goedert throwing a punch at Trey Dempsey in the pile. Dempsey seemed to think that he was punching at the ball, but it was after the play, and really that's not how you're taught to get rid of the football. The strip thing is not so much of a punch move as it is a rip move. I think that Goedert was potentially frustrated because he could feel the season slipping away from him. And, you know, for a long time, the coaching staff has gotten a pass because Kleiman says such nice things about Stiglmeyer, and he has such a Midwestern aw shucks feel to him. He's very kind of Jerry Kill in that way. And I think that it's starting to become kind of a facade in the sense of, you know, if your players are doing this and that's how you're teaching them to play football, that's really not good. But if your players are doing this and you're not correcting it, that's not really great either. And I'm sure NDSU has, you know, played some part in this. I would guess that I'm, you know, not the most neutral person to talk about it, but it certainly seems to be, as far as the stuff that I would consider dirty or cheap, seems to be particularly one-sided as of late. I think even the last time, too, there was the incident where Bryce Messer's helmet got popped off. It's just a lot of stuff goes on in this game. These teams really don't like each other, and it's adding to the rivalry. I don't think that there's any question about that. You watch these games, there is some hatred on both sides.
Bottom line, though, here, as we wrap up this edition of the BisonReport.com radio podcast, is the Bison move on. They face James Madison this upcoming Friday. And from looking at the early line, that Ross and I aren't really entirely sure if it's accurate or what it is, but I believe it has James Madison as a 2-point favorite. Ross, just Bison move on. James Madison, here we go on Friday.
Yeah, we're going to have to dive into a preview. We're going to have to wait, I think, obviously, for some real lines to come in, at least some reputable sports book. But this VegasInsider.com thing, wow, I tell you what, to have a non-conference opponent, to take bets on a non-conference opponent coming into the Fargo Dome to play NDSU in the playoffs – and to give points, to me,
they clearly don't know the stats.
Yeah, I mean that's asking for it. But we're gonna dive into that stuff either on Thursday or Friday. Well, it'll have to be Thursday when the preview pod comes out.
Anything else, Ross, before we wrap things up for today?
Just the content. I have a potentially very exciting interview for Thursday's pod. I have made the request. I have not heard back for sure. This is finals week, so it's difficult, but. If that request is granted, we'll have a great interview for the podcast, and I will be able to hopefully write a passable story upon the receiving of that interview. But for sure, I think I'm going to be able to talk to Dimitri Williams and kind of talk a little bit about his development. I mentioned him in the film review session. His name came up, not actually even for me today, in the press conference with Coach Kleiman. So should be able to talk to Dimitri, but might also have another very exciting interview for Bison fans. So check that stuff out, and we will see you guys later on in the week.
Sounds good to me. So we'll be back later this week to preview a couple of very big games coming up on Friday, one for the basketball team and obviously one for the football squad as well. So we thank you guys for listening once again. If you haven't already, head on over to thebisonreport.com to check out the latest and greatest from Ross, and I also have the latest and greatest here with what's going on in recruiting on there as well. So we thank you guys for listening once again. We'll see you later this week. Go Bison.